It's great to have you along. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Rose Scott. Dennis, pay close attention to the following numbers. 78 million adults and 12 million children are obese. And for adults, that's considered obesity. They're considered obese when 35 pounds overweight. Well, this week, health officials with the Research Centers at Minority Institutions, or RCMI, came together at Atlanta's Morehouse School of Medicine. And RCMI scientists and community partners decided to tackle obesity among African Americans, Hispanics, Native Hawaiians, and Pacific Islanders. And joining a closer look to talk about all of this is the director and senior associate dean with the Clinical Research Center and Clinical and Translational Research at Morehouse School of Medicine. That's a mouthful. Dr. Elizabeth O'Feely. Dr. O'Feely, good to see you again as always.
Thank you so much for
having me. And also the Reverend Dr. Jason Owen, who's the president of the Community Advisory Board for the Clinical Research Center at Morehouse School of Medicine. Thank you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Let's begin with this. Is it accurate to say that obesity is an epidemic in the United States? Dr. O'Feely, I'll start with you.
Yes, Rose, we think obesity is an epidemic because as long as the CDC has been tracking this, the rates of obesity have simply grown exponentially. And if you look at the map, what the CDC has done is showing state by state what the proportion of individuals that are over a certain weight. And that number just keeps getting, the percentages keep getting higher and higher. And so when we look at just a broader adult population, 1 in 3, when you stop to look at what's going on with African Americans, you're actually almost looking at 1 in 2. Mm-hmm. So by all definitions, we have an epidemic on our hands.
And so as it relates to the minority populations, which was my next question, and Dr. Owen, you can chime in on this, the obesity rate is higher.
Yes, definitely. That's what we're seeing presenting in the community, the African-American community in particular.
Dr. Owen, let me pursue that with you for a second, because someone might say we have seen so many public health campaigns going on aimed at the general population and in underserved and minority communities. Why is the obesity rate continuing to go up despite all of these efforts?
I believe it's learned behavior within a ethnic and cultural grouping. I don't think we'll be able to dispel it overnight, or I think it will take some time. And what we're endeavoring to do is to do the cultural broker approach, where we have someone within the community being a liaison for us to show us who are the leaders of their community groups and what is the most effective language to use in addressing these issues and helping them to change these learned behaviors.
And Dr. O'Feely, how do you go about doing that? Because that sounds like time-consuming, person-to-person almost, grassroots work in the community.
Right. So one of the opportunities that we saw within the network is these institutions are all focused on health disparities. These institutions have top-notch scientists who have made all kinds of discoveries. What we're learning, though, is these discoveries don't necessarily translate out to the community.
But they don't get communicated?
Well, sometimes it goes beyond communication. Because all of us, somebody once told me, you know, I can look in the mirror. I know I'm overweight or obese. I mean, I got a mirror in my house, too. So it goes beyond that. It speaks to what are some of the barriers out there? Because just seeing that you're obese, I mean, you know that. But what should you be doing? What are the steps that work? It turns out that it's different for different people. I'm a cardiologist, so I have patients that come to me. We know they're at risk for a heart attack. They know they're at risk for a heart attack. But when we engage them in a discussion around, okay, what do you have access to? You can go to the mall. You can walk. Yes, yes, they say. You can maybe park a little farther away. Yes, yes, they say. But there is a different kind of a switch for different people. The exciting thing we think when we heard that all these scientists want to focus on obesity is we are learning some connectivity between the desire to change behavior and actual engagement of that behavior change, two different things.
Well, doctors, doesn't it also bring in the factor of socioeconomic issues here.
Yep.
Whether we talk about, and we talked about this yesterday, in terms of access to fresh fruits and vegetables.
Yep.
Exactly.
Being able to, for some people, transportation. We've had that discussion,
right.
How transportation is a barrier that can lead to poverty. And then a lot of this, there are these many socioeconomic factors. Is that being addressed as well?
Yes. So the social determinants are really front and center here. And we do understand, because as Denny said, there's been large national campaigns. What's different about this, we think? What is different about this is all of these 18 institutions says we are going to prioritize this. We have laboratory resources, we have technology, but also we have new ways of understanding what motivates and sustains behavior change. Well, my patients want to know about that.
That's where I was going. Translate that down to the physician that's treating the person from these minority populations.
Exactly. They want to know about that. And sometimes also we're learning that doctors don't want to talk about that. Sometimes they're uncomfortable with the notion of, well, you know, it's going to be the same old, same old. I don't want to have this conversation. You and I have talked about it ad nauseum. But we learn that patients actually want to hear from you. What do you think is working? Can I communicate to you why I like the certain foods that I like? What do you have that can help me engage some change? So we are optimistic that we will get there. We have some research that shows it is possible to make change.
So Dr. Owen, what is the key to getting that trigger going? Because Dr. Ofili was just saying, look, you know, somebody can say, I know I'm obese, but turning that knowledge into changing behavior and then acting on that, do we know what the keys are to pulling that trigger?
We partially do. The main impetus is the strong desire for change, and we begin with that. They want to change. They don't know how. And then we act as navigators, showing them how they can turn that desire into actual something that they're doing.
Give me a for instance.
For instance, I want to stop living a sedentary life. I want to stop sitting in my apartment and not moving around. There are no green spaces. Okay, let's do this. What if we become a part of some kind of activity-based club or association or society where we can come pick you up? We go to the park, we do things, senior center, community center kind of activities. And once we furnish them with those options and opportunities, we see them act upon them.
When you, with this collaboration between the RCMI, the scientists, the clinicians, and the community, and we've talked about a lot of great ideas, but you have to sort of have a outline strategy to address obesities in the select minority populations.
Right.
And when you talk about whether it's African American or Hispanic or Pacific,
Native Hawaiian,
it's important. We've heard studies about having physicians that come from those populations to lead the strategies in that. Is that also a part of this?
Yes, indeed. So there's a workforce component. So many of our institutions that I mentioned, the RCMIs, are very much focused on having a large minority workforce that represents the community that they serve. So some of these are pharmacy schools, medical schools, veterinary schools, and PhD scientists, and some nursing school participants as well. So the workforce component comes into play because the other thing we're learning is when you ask actually an individual to make change, but they don't feel empowered, whether it's because where they live, there's some limitations, that self-efficacy is a big part of behavior change. We've had individuals who participate in some of these programs say, I don't even know anybody cared enough about this to make, to talk to me about my diabetes, to talk to me about my obesity. That makes a difference that I know I can do something about it. Just understanding that we're not dismissive of this problem because, you know, everybody has things that they need to work on. And we're learning that engagement is critical. And having someone who can think like you, understand where you're coming from, makes a difference.
But isn't there also a hindrance based on region? Because you look at Atlanta, well, we have the Morehouse School of Medicine.
Right.
You have partnerships, whether it's with Emory or Grady,
right,
or what have you.
Right.
Let's go down to South Georgia. Let's look at Albany, or let's look at another county where the barriers, not only just access, but just a barrier. We talked about this the other day. Rural hospitals and community centers already have another battle. So region plays a role in this as well.
Yep, it does. And so I think that when you asked about what are first steps and next steps, some of what we are looking to do is actually to pose some questions based on what we know is scientifically valid right now, you know, and then have those questions vetted with the community, with our community partners, and see what will work within your community, because it might be slightly different for South Georgia than for Atlanta.
And how much of this, and Dr. Rona, I'll start with you, is tied into something that isn't directly related to the science of health, which is insurance, coverage, the Affordable Care Act? Are you tying that in where you can say another way to get yourself going is to realize, okay, you might be able to get coverage for this?
Definitely. That has been a tremendous motivator. And as Dr. Ofili has alluded to, there are people that we use within the communities that we like to refer to as cultural brokers or community brokers. They are the stakeholders within the community. They know the people, they know the lifestyle, they know the felt needs, and they know the language that will indeed resonate with them, and they teach us how to help them.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ofili, why obesity? There are so many conditions that plague underserved and minority communities. Why did you pick obesity as the one to start with or to target for this?
So that's an excellent question. So the scientists actually said at first, well, obesity is just so broad. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to tackle. And then they paused and they said, well, you know, obesity is actually an umbrella condition that affects heart disease, diabetes, stroke, cancer. So, and then there are all these new discoveries around obesity that a lot of people don't know about. For example, what happens with the food you eat and how that interacts with the bacteria within your gut has a lot to do with whether you're obese or not. Yeah. They've actually found some very interesting data that shows how we metabolize foods, you know, has a lot to do with whether we're obese or not. And yes, there is an opportunity to personalize what we're talking about in terms of what works for Rose is different from what works for me and what works for you, Dennis. Mm-hmm. And so the scientists actually became excited when they saw the opportunity to connect these dots and bring their respective expertise to bear. And because we're a national group, we're excited because through our partnerships, both with the community as well as with other universities, we think there's opportunity to make change here and hopefully change this conversation around obesity for our communities.
Which leads me to this as we wrap up. How do you measure the outcomes with this collaboration?
Yes.
A year out, 2 years out? When do you all come back and sort of bring all this data together?
Yes. So we have some short-term goals and some more longer-term goals. The short-term goals is actually to even get our numbers together in terms of what are the questions that matter to these communities, and then take those questions and as scientists talk about how we would plate that out in year one and year two, and then close this out by saying, what are the outcomes that matter to you? Does it matter to you that you can now do some of the activities you couldn't do in the past, and then use that as a goalpost, if you will.
And then real quickly, do you take those results? It's obviously you're talking about a little bit of time here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But do you take those results and the things that worked, and to circle back to where we started, translate those, communicate those to the people who do the big money public health campaigns and say, hey, guys, here's something that we found that works that might make your next campaign more effective.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. Somebody said to me, There are lots of resources out there. We're not connecting them effectively. Sometimes you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You've just got to connect these partnerships right. So we can scale up our effort.
All right. Dr. Elizabeth Ofili, she's the director and senior associate dean with the Clinical Research Center at Morehouse School of Medicine, and the Reverend Dr. Jason Owen, who's the president of the Community Advisory Board for the Clinical Research Center. Thank you both for coming in and taking the
time.
Thank you
so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.